week we're continuing the study of the 140th Psalm, the psalm that we begin singing at Vespers with, "Lord, I have cried to thee, hearken unto me." We've talked about it for a couple of weeks now, and now we're at the verse that says, "For yet more is my prayer in the presence of their pleasures." A lot of these psalm verses, the meaning is not real obvious, and a lot of times when we listen to them, we just let them whiz past and we don't ask the question, what is he saying here? "For yet more is my prayer in the presence of their pleasures." But what this passage is saying is that when we're faced, and this is in the context of talking about the ungodly, last week we talked about, "Let not the oil of sinners anoint my head," and here it's saying that in the presence of their pleasures, in other words, when faced with the sins and the sinful temptations of the wicked, our prayer is to be all the more fervent. "For yet more is my prayer" means that I'm going to be praying all the more when I'm faced with that. I'm not going to be joining in their sins. I'm not going to be giving into the temptations. I'm going to be praying all the more. I'm going to be praying for them. I'm going to be praying for myself that God will give me the strength to resist the temptations that I'm presented with. The next verse, "Swallowed up near by the rock have their judges been." Their judges refer to the wisest of the worldly people. And of course, there are many people we could point to as examples of people that everyone thinks are very smart, that they know all sorts of stuff, and people seek out their opinions and read their books, and they're thought very highly of. But it says, "Swallowed up near by the rock have their judges been." Set them next to the rock, which is Christ, and they are nothing. And St. Paul, in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 25, he says, "Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men." That's a pretty amazing statement on St. Paul's part, because we don't think of God as being foolish, but he's saying, if you could think of the most foolish thing that God might ever think or do, it is so far wiser than anything that man has ever thought of as to be unimaginable what the difference would be. And so these smart Alecks of our day that think that they know so much, in comparison with the wisdom of God, they know absolutely nothing. No matter how smug they are, when the glory of God is revealed at the end of the age, they will all be put to shame. "They shall hear my words, for they be sweetened." Again, that's another verse that when you hear that, it's not obvious what it's saying. But we're talking about the sinners. "They shall hear my words, for they be sweet." What the Father says, when they're put to shame, they shall hear the words of truth because they're sweetened with grace and truth. So the words of truth that we speak, the faith that we proclaim, they shall finally hear. "As a clod of earth is broken upon the earth, so have their bones been scattered nigh unto Hades." If you've ever played around with dirt clods, when I was a kid, we had mud clod fights all the time. We would make these little balls of mud, and we would let them dry so they'd be nice and hard. Sometimes we'd put a rock in them to add a little bit more oomph to it. And then we'd have fights with the neighbors. When you throw a mud clod on something hard, what happens to it? It just busts into a ball of smoke. And it disintegrates because there's nothing of any substance to it. And so the image of the wicked is just like that, that all these people, all of the wicked, will be brought to utter destruction just as quickly as a mud clod thrown against a wall disintegrates. And it says, "So have their bones been scattered nigh into Hades." When you think about their bones, obviously this is when they're destroyed. And it talks about their bones being scattered near hell. And so that's the image that the psalmist is giving us here. "For unto thee, O Lord, are mine eyes, and thee have I hope. Take not my soul away." He's saying, I trust in God. God is my only hope. And when he talks about take not my soul away, in Hebrew, the word soul is used interchangeably as a word that refers to our life. When it talks about how God breathed into the clay that he made Adam from, it says he became a living soul. And the scriptures also talk about even animals as having, in Hebrew, nefesh, or soul. And so that's life. What animals don't have is spirit. They don't have the higher aspects of the soul, but they have life. And so we're asking that God would preserve our life, and we're looking to him, we're trusting in him. Keep me from the snare which they have laid for me, and from the stumbling blocks of them that work iniquity. Many are the snares of the wicked, and we're asking that God would deliver us. But we have to be wise, we have to watch for them, and we have to have the will to avoid them. It's presumptuous for us to put ourselves into situations where we know we're going to be faced with very strong temptations and then ask God to deliver us out of those temptations when we should have known better than to put ourselves in there in the first place. We have to cooperate with God, not just expect that God's miraculously going to deliver us out of the messes that we keep putting ourselves in. The sinner shall fall into their own net. In the book of Job, we read this statement. He catches the wise in their own craftiness, and the counsel of the cunning comes quickly upon them. In other words, the things that the wicked seek to do wind up bringing about their own destruction. And then this psalm ends with the phrase, I am alone until I pass by. Next week we'll continue because there's about, I think, three other psalms that are used in the verses that are read at Lord, I have cried, and so we'll cover them all to the end. But this is a very interesting ending to the psalm, I am alone until I pass by. This refers to what Christ was talking about when he said, enter ye at the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. But narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. We're faced with many circumstances in our life where we may be the only person who's making any attempt to resist the crowd's tendency towards evil. There are very many occasions where you're out with your friends or you're around other people that you may know or that you may work with, and everybody is doing something that you know isn't right. And you're faced with a choice. You're faced with a choice that you can either go along with them, yuck it up with them, be one of the crowd, not be thought to be weird or some sort of a religious fanatic, or you can choose to go it alone. And that's not always an easy decision to make, but that is the decision that Christ calls us to make, because narrow is the gate that leads to life. Broad is the road that leads to destruction. The easy way is the road to hell. The hard way is the road to heaven, and we have to choose to be the only person that's not going to do what everybody else is doing. Parents are familiar with kids coming to them and making the argument, well, everybody else is doing it, and the usual parental response is, well, if everyone was jumping off a cliff, would you go along with them? Well, the answer obviously is no. Well, when everyone is jumping off into hell, do we want to jump off with them? No. And that's exactly what they're doing when they're doing that which we know is not right. And what you will sometimes find is that when you are the one person who will stand up and not go along with them, you'll find that there might be one or two other people who have the same kind of pangs of conscience that you're having. And the fact that you stand up and you say, no, I'm not going to do this, will embolden some of them to say, yeah, I'm not going to do that either. And maybe they were teetering on the brink, but the fact that you chose to do the right thing will embolden them to also do the right thing. And so we have to choose to go it alone, even if sometimes we hope that we're not alone, but we have to be prepared to do that. So let us keep our eyes on God and not be tempted or distracted by the passing and illusory pleasures of the wicked, but knowing the destruction that awaits those who live that way, let us follow the narrow path, no matter how lonely it may be at times, until we pass by all the snares of this life and find our rest in God. Amen.